debt. It keeps you tossing and turning at night. You can't get away from it. But the truth is, the system is designed to trap you in debt. Insanely high interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. There's a new way out of the debt trap, Pivotal Debt Solutions. Pivotal Debt Solutions isn't like the old school debt relief companies that string your debt out for years. They have aggressive strategies that can end your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Pivotal Debt Solutions can cut or even eliminate interest. Find programs to write off your balances so you owe less. Stop those threatening phone calls, and without bankruptcy and without a loan. Bottom line, they find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Pivotal Debt Solutions first. Talk to them for free. Find out how fast they can help you get out of debt. Visit zapmydebt.com. That's zapmydebt.com. Zapmydebt.com.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Wow, a lot going on in the news today. We will be getting to as we continue through the program. Allison Gill is going to drop by. Mueller, she wrote, is her podcast. She's an investigative reporter. Why was Mike Pence and his entire staff locked out of the safe, secure offices for the vice president in the Capitol during the traitorous, seditious coup attempt? And I want to know, is the January 6th Treason Committee looking into this? And by the way, I think we should all start calling it the Treason Committee. Start the hashtag Treason Committee, just always refer to it as the Treason Committee. Maybe we can get the media to start referring to the 1-6 Committee in Congress as the Treason Committee, because they're looking into treason. Come on, let's call this what it is. But was this an attempt to murder Mike Pence? Inquiring minds want to know. Allison Gill will be with us. And Naveed Shah, one of the best ways to help disabled vets is to pass the voting rights bill. We'll get to that. And, you know, a salute to all our veterans out there. We have one here in the studio. In fact, Joyce is a veteran and came in and gave us her PFC Joyce salute this morning. But there's a trending hashtag, you know, so support veterans and pass voting rights. I'm sorry, I have this hashtag wrong. I don't have it right in front of me, but I retweeted it earlier this morning that if we really want to support our veterans, this is a Common Defense came out with this. This means more than just giving statements of gratitude and support in a year of unprecedented attacks on our democracy. Honoring veterans must include action on behalf of veterans, including their freedom to vote. So let's do that. It's also my 49th anniversary. So Louise, I love you. Thank you for 49 great years. Actually, longer than, well, 49 years we've been married. We've been together longer than that. In fact, we were married at 11:11 a.m., which is also when the armistice for World War I was signed. Very interesting. Okay, in this hour, I want to get into what jurists don't know about Kyle Rittenhouse and the fact that he was essentially a right-wing terrorist taking pictures and flashing white power signs with Proud Boys after he killed two people. We'll get into that. But during a break, I was scrolling through my Twitter timeline or whatever you call it, and here was this tweet by Allison Gill. She's the host of Mueller, She Wrote. It's a great podcast. Mueller, M-U-E-L-L-E-R, She Wrote, WROTE.com is the website if you want to, you know, sign up for it, and also DailyBeansPod.com. And Mueller, M-U-E-L-L-E-R, She Wrote is the Twitter handle as well. And I saw this tweet, Pence's team huddled in the loading dock, unable to access their offices, presumably in the Capitol building, because their access badge had been didn't work anymore. And I'm like, holy cow, is this the smoking gun that shows that Mike Pence was actually being set up to be executed? And but I don't know. I retweeted it with a note wondering if that was the case. And sure enough, Allison Gill is on the line with us right now, the host of the Mueller She Wrote podcast. And so why, Allison, welcome to the program. Why was Pence and his staff locked out of his office? Why was his badge deactivated on the day that that traitorous act on January 6th happened?
Well, hi. First of all, thanks for having me.
My pleasure.
The why, I think the why would be speculative. I don't know. But, you know, we've heard reporting from Jonathan Carl at ABC that they were huddled in that parking garage. There are apparently photographs of that happening that Pence himself has blocked from being released. And, you know, there's so much reporting that's out there publicly about Pence not wanting to leave the Capitol, not trusting the people to get into a car to drive him away from the Capitol. But the why, I mean, I'm with you. If all of a sudden you're the vice president and your staff, your aides, and you are unable to access your office because your card keys, which worked earlier in the morning, are no longer functioning, and they also don't work at the White House or the VP office complex, and then they're restored later that night after the violence has passed, you have to wonder why, because other folks in Congress were able to access their offices, and senators were able to use their cards to access their offices. So it seems very pointed and interesting that it's the VP and his staff that had to end up in a parking garage, huddled down there talking about a constitutional crisis instead of in their offices, holed up and hunkered down.
Well, Allison, this raises a whole pile of questions. Number one, who had the authority to authorize or deauthorize these card keys? Number two, was this done, you know, mistakenly or with the best of intentions to try to protect Pence, although I can't figure out how that would work? Number three, was this done because at that point in time when those cards got deauthorized, if this was some conspiracy being run out of the White House or by Donald Trump or out of the Willard Hotel war room, because at that point they expected that Mike Pence would have already been executed by the mob, and they didn't want, you know, the mob to have access to the offices. They didn't want any of that stuff to get out. Or is this, was this a way of making Pence more available to the mob? Would he have had higher security in his own, you know, there is an office for the vice president there in the Capitol? Would he, you know, would it have been a place he could safely hide out? I mean, I don't know the answers to any of these questions, but those are the questions this raises for me. Are there other ones it raises for you? And do you think any of mine are particularly cogent or particularly stupid?
No, I think they're all cogent, especially I'm very interested in who has access to deactivate those cards, particularly with the new information we're getting about a fellow named McEntee, who, you know, we've been reporting on him for a long time on the Mueller She Wrote podcast, but he was a 29-year-old in charge of the president's personnel office, in charge of hiring and firing and bringing on ambassadors and cabinet members. And I'm assuming giving them key cards, access cards, but I don't know if they do that or if the Secret Service does that. I'm not sure who's in charge of that. I asked my sources and they did not tell me. And then also, one of my questions as well, Tom, was maybe these were deactivated as a safety measure. For example, if somebody from the mob, the riotous mob, got a hold of somebody's key card, somebody like the vice president or
after he got hung
person, right. Well, then would they have access to these offices instead of having to do what they did, which was resort to breaking down doors? But again, everyone else's card keys worked, and the fact that their card keys also did not work at the White House and the you know, the separate vice president office complex from the Capitol complex, or the vice president offices in the Capitol complex, just seems a little too much of a coincidence.
Well, it seems like the vice president got deauthorized himself.
Yeah, I personally think that that's the case. And again, that's speculation. I do not have any corroboration on that. But that seems to me like he was locked out and left to the mob.
Now, one of the things that Trump is fighting a release of is apparently, and I'm hearing this from press reports, I don't have an inside source in the January 6th treason committee, but apparently Trump had prepared an executive order of some sort, and nobody knows what's in it, and they want to get their hands on it. What if the executive order was to say, you know, Mike Pence didn't do his job, he's no longer vice president, I'm appointing, you know, John McAtee as my vice president or whoever, and so, hey, you're not vice president anymore, we're going to deauthorize your card. Do you know anything about that? About this so-called executive order?
Yeah, I don't know what's in that executive order. I'm very interested to find out, though I do think that if those documents go to the committee, they probably won't be released to the public anytime soon to help preserve any potential future criminal investigations. But, you know, I mean, maybe that executive order is declaring martial law, which was a kind of part of the plan, part of Eastman's, you know, coup plan. Right. If they couldn't get, you know, if they were trying to get maybe some people kidnapped or, I really don't know what's in that.
The other thing I'm
interested to find out about it.
Yeah, me too. We're talking with Allison Gill, the host of the Mueller She Wrote podcast. Allison, you know, we have this whole scenario that has, you know, of Hang Mike Pence, where they were, you know, marching through the halls chanting Hang Mike Pence. Somebody brought the stuff for a gallows, and this was not some little 2x4 rickety thing. This was done by, you know, with 8x8 pieces of, you know, giant pieces of wood with holes drilled in them and bolts, and it's a real functioning gallows. I read in the media last week that somebody had preserved the hangman's noose itself. But do we have any idea who brought that gallows, who built that gallows, how it got built on the lawn of the Capitol building without anybody noticing it, and what happened to it after January 6th or at the end of the day?
Outside of the public reporting, no. And my sources didn't have any insight into that, although the FBI does have the noose, which indicates to me they're investigating that. And that was another question that you had that I also had, because my sources said that they were speaking on the condition of anonymity because of ongoing investigations, plural. Now, I asked, were these law enforcement investigations, meaning Department of Justice criminal investigations, or were these congressional investigations, meaning January 6th committee? And they would not answer that. So that is still a question that I do not have answered. And I think that's a question that the rest of the United States is waiting to find out. Is the Department of Justice investigating the higher ups, the funders, the leaders, the insiders of the insurrection?
Yeah. I mean, the speculation is just going nuts. Last point here, Allison, co-host of the Mueller She Wrote podcast, is the information that you have that these key cards were deactivated, is that information that the January 6th Treason Investigation Committee also has?
I'm unable to answer that question at this time, okay, based on conversations I've had with sources.
Okay. Well, let's hope so.
I can't help you there.
I get it. I'm not trying to out your source or anything like that, but this is big. I think this is big news. I think this really has the potential to be huge news. Allison Gill breaking the story at the Mueller She Wrote podcast. It's M-U-E-L-L-E-R, MuellerSheWrote.com and DailyBeansPod.com. And, of course, Mueller She Wrote on Twitter and DailyBeansPod on Twitter. Allison, thank you so much for dropping by. Great talking with you.
Thanks so much, Tom. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Keep up the great work. Okay, back to Kyle Rittenhouse. I want to just lay this down, and then I'm going to pick up your phone calls. First of all, here's a kid who is essentially a wannabe cop, and, you know, well marinated in the whole right-wingosphere of authoritarianism and copism, and he's hooked up with white supremacists. After he killed two people and blew the bicep off another one, injured for the rest of his life, a third person, Kyle Rittenhouse, with a big smile on his face, is flashing the white power sign as he's being photographed with a Proud Boy, you know, with an openly white power group. I think that, you know, frankly, the best thing that can happen is for this case to actually have a mistrial and start all over again with a different judge, a judge who doesn't have Donald Trump's campaign theme song as his ringtone. Did you catch this? I believe it was yesterday. The judge, you know, during the trial, the judge's phone went off and it was Donald Trump's theme song. The judge's phone. So declare a mistrial, have a different judge, and have a different prosecutor. Instead of trying to knock down a self-defense claim, How about building a claim that this kid never should have had an AR-15 in the first place? He's 17 years old. He couldn't legally have an AR-15. He couldn't legally possess it. He carried it across state lines. He showed up at what he thought was a riot. And, you know, at a protest or both. I mean, whatever you want to call it, he showed up there with a rifle. And that in and of itself is a crime. Why is he not being prosecuted for that? And then in the process of committing that crime, he, by the way, committed two murders. Now, I'm not a lawyer. Maybe a lawyer out there can tell me where I'm wrong on this. But, you know, basically, Rittenhouse's entire defense is I was a volunteer cop. And he's using the same defense that police who are accused of killing people in the line of duty use. He literally had memorized a number of these things and said, you know, over and over and over again when he was testifying that, you know, the guy that I shot reached for my gun. Well, cops say that, right? I was afraid for my life. Cops say that. That's the justification for pulling the trigger. I fired until the threat was eliminated. That's like cop speak. I just used force to defend myself. Cop speak. I used the legal amount of force authorized to protect myself and others. Mortos has a great thread about this, by the way, over at Democratic Underground right now. And, you know, I agree with Mortos, by the way, that, and he notes, he says, can you imagine how quickly a black 17-year-old carrying an illegally obtained assault rifle would be convicted of murder if he went to a right-wing anti-vax protest and shot anybody who tried to disarm him? In fact, Rittenhouse was the criminal. He was illegally in possession of an AR-15. Somebody grabbed it and tried to disarm him, to take it away from him, and he killed them. The person who tried to take away his gun was actually the one who was trying to prevent violence. He was trying to take away Rittenhouse's gun. Or am I missing something here? Anyhow, Jessica in Chicago. Hey, Jessica, what's on your mind today?
Happy anniversary, Tom.
Thank you.
We are on the same exact wavelength. There are three things the Rittenhouse and the Ahmaud Arbery trial have in common. First, there shouldn't even be these trials. They're false claims of self-defense. A jogger hunted, outnumbered by three Ku Klux Klan members. Rittenhouse, wearing a red fanny pack with a roll of gauze, claiming he's an EMT, a medic with an AK-15 fully loaded to kill 30 people. There's no such thing.
Right.
So the second thing these both have in common, these should be prosecuted as hate crimes. Where is our DOJ? We need a conscience DOJ. Sorry, I'm getting all riled up again. None of these defenses are paying for their own lawyers. They're funded through a site that they pay the insurrectionists legal fees to. And I can even throw number four in. Trump is watching these. This is his entertainment. He was the one who spoke up for Rittenhouse right away, and we gave him what he wanted.
Yeah, I think the most dangerous outcome of this, Jessica, is that all over the country there are right-wing yahoos with assault weapons who are thinking, huh, next protest I go to, I'm going to kill some people. Apparently, there's no consequence for that.
Yes, and this is a setup trial. This is a phony trial. The prosecution talks back to the judge. Are you kidding me? The judge yells and screams.
Yeah.
He's so awful. We know Mitch McConnell fought to have all those drama king judges in place. Merrick Garland needs to stop this. They're false trials, and they should be hate crimes.
Well, these are both state trials, so, you know, Merrick Garland has no part, you know, he has no part in this right now. I mean, theoretically, if Rittenhouse gets off, he could be sued by the federal government for denying the civil rights of the people who he killed or something like that. But yeah.
Aren't they hate crimes?
Well, that's my point. He could be prosecuted for a hate crime, but he's not being prosecuted. Oh, I see what you're saying. You're saying that Merrick Garland needs to come in and file hate crime charges against the guys in Georgia and against Rittenhouse.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that. But I think, you know, let's get the murder stuff out of the way first. But the prosecution in this case is just blowing my mind. Jessica, thank you for the call. Kenyatta in Los Angeles. Hey, you're watching the Rittenhouse trial too?
Well, I'm actually listening to it, Tom. And first of all, I wanted to talk to you about the acquittal of Kyle Rittenhouse, because that's exactly what is going to happen. I'm not one that is silly enough to make predictions about such things publicly, but this thing has already gone off the rails. I don't know if you know this, but a judge who is a real weirdo, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of judicial temperament, cleared the courtroom. He was very angry, but in this case, he had a reason to be. The prosecution, Kyle Rittenhouse, as you know, has taken the stand.
Right.
And the prosecution and cross-examination, one of the first questions the prosecutor asked is, you know, you're here, I'm paraphrasing, today telling your story, but you were silent before. You waited until, it was inferring that you waited until you had all of, you know, the evidence that the prosecution put on it. Now you want to tailor your story to that. And even though that may be true, constitutionally, that is absolutely a death knell. So not only is Kyle Rittenhouse going to be acquitted prior to this incident, if nothing else, the prosecution is guaranteed a mistrial. Tom, I don't understand something. Why this case by the prosecution? They seem to have fallen into a trap with the defense, and that the defense was trying to make this a self-defense case. And the prosecution fell into the trap of trying to counter that instead of understanding this. First of all, this is a kid, 17 years old, from another state, who comes talking about he's protecting the gas station. He's protecting the car source with an AR-15. I don't understand the prosecution in this in this case. But let me tell you this, Tom, and I'll shut my mouth. The most troubling thing for me is something that you probably, I'm sure, have absolutely no concept of. And that's, I see a similarity in this and the 92 riots in Los Angeles, or so-called riots. And let me tell you what that is. No one's ever talked about this, but I was there. And from the time that that verdict was announced that day, within hours, and I'm talking
this is
three
Rodney
or
King?
Four. Rodney King.
Yeah.
But those riots weren't about Rodney King, but that's another story.
Yeah.
Within hours, I'm talking about, it's still daylight. So the verdict comes out about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Within, by 4 or 5 o'clock, all of the liquor stores and wig businesses and all those things that permeate black communities all over the country, there were Korean store owners on rooftops with AR-15s and bulletproof vests. And I'm talking dozens and dozens, block after block. No one's ever said anything about this. And I think about Kyle Rittenhouse, 17 years old from another state, walking down the streets with an AR-15, and the cops are offering him water. And he's apparently, from his testimony, he's wanting to give himself up, and they're just letting him go. Here's the thing. Here's the parallel for me. I keep wondering, just like the insurrection on January 6th, if those were people that looked like me, how would the cops have responded?
Yeah. Well, that was the thing I, the point that I almost made was, you know, he was killing white people. You know, it's like that has to be tainting the whole thing. Anyhow, Kenyatta, thank you. Thank you for your observations. It's always good to hear from you.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So I retweeted a tweet that showed the picture of Rittenhouse with the Proud Boys doing the white power salute. I had said earlier this was right after he killed these people. Apparently I was wrong on that. Just want to correct myself on the air here. Apparently this was months later that he became basically the hero of right-wingers who have fantasies about killing left-wing protesters, sadly. So, for the record. Josh in Minneapolis says here you disagree with me. About what?
Well, it's not entirely that I disagree with you. I wish that your show would be a little bit more balanced. I like to listen to both sides of everything. I listen to left-wing radio and right-wing radio, and I like to find my...
Well, if you're listening to the right-wing radio, Josh, you're not listening to both sides on there. But, you know, I opened the show with a debate with a conservative. But, you know, whatever. Make your point. What's your point?
So my point is like, I constantly hear you say, like, about the January 6th insurrection. Right. And you're very quick to always say it's an insurrection. You want, like, everybody prosecuted for that. But I don't think I've ever heard you bring up about all the riots going on. Like, I live in Minnesota, just outside of Minneapolis. I've seen the things happening. Seen it firsthand that it was almost like a war zone.
Josh, I have said dozens of times, and I said it a lot when this was going on here in Portland, that people who destroy property, people who are rioting, should be arrested and prosecuted. But that doesn't mean that you should show up with an AR-15 and shoot them.
I'm not saying that people need to show up with an AR-15, which was my other point is, if what he was going to do was actually just go there to help protect buildings, stop people from causing damage or from
hurting
each
other. Which is not what he did.
And knowing that, well, I'm just saying that if that's what his intentions were, that's what he was believing he was doing, and that's all he intended to do, like that's what he says, then when he went there, yes, he does have every right to protect himself if he's going there, knowing that people are assaulting people are hurting people are armed, and people are getting hurt doing this. So if he's going there and he's just trying to help stop these things, but he also realizes my life might be in danger, I should probably think ahead and have a way to defend myself as well. That's all he was doing, then he had every right to have that with him and protect himself if he had it legally.
That's which he did not.
A question up in the air.
No, he legally couldn't own an AR-15. He got it through a straw purchaser. He couldn't legally own it. He committed a crime. He was a criminal walking down the street because already he had committed a crime simply by walking down the street with that AR-15. And when a guy walked up to him and tried to disarm him, tried to take it away from him, he killed him. A law-abiding citizen tried to stop a criminal, and the criminal killed the law-abiding citizen, the criminal in this case being Rittenhouse. That's how I'm looking at it.
If he should not have been carrying a firearm if he was doing it illegally.
And he was.
I'm a firm believer that everybody should be carrying their firearms completely legally.
I agree with you.
But
he was not.
On the other perspective,
he was carrying it illegally. You know, he was committing a crime. He crossed state line.
I don't know if he had that, but... If the question, in fact, I'm not going to argue with it. If he was carrying something illegally, then yes, then that's something that I would think that he should be prosecuted for.
Yeah.
If he was defending his life, if that's what they're trying him for, and he was being assaulted, like from what I heard of one of the people that he had shot was admitting on the stand that yes, he was attacking him while he got shot. So at that point, it says, well, that to me it says self-defense if this person was attacking him.
Yeah. Well, this is what the jury is going to sort out, Josh. But what disappoints me is
illegally. I do agree that you should not be carrying something illegally. I'm a firm believer. You know, I believe in the Second Amendment. I'm a gun owner, but I also am very strict on you need to abide by every law while using them.
Yeah, I'm with you, Josh. I got to run, but thank you very much, Brad in Prattville, Illinois or Alabama. Excuse me. Hey, Brad, what's up?
Hey, Tom. The question that I have about Rittenhouse, if he cross state lines with a firearm with the intention of killing somebody, which I don't see. I firmly believe that he had real intent at minimum. Is that not a federal crime in and of itself? And could he not be prosecuted for crossing state lines?
Well, you would have to establish that that was his intention. I mean, he's asserting, first of all, a caller earlier said that Rittenhouse had a friend in Wisconsin buy the weapon for him. So the weapon didn't cross state lines, just Rittenhouse did. Which raises the question, you know, what's the deal with his mom? She was being interviewed by Sean Hannity yesterday, I guess. You know, she was the one who drove him to this riot, right? Did they stop along the way and pick up an AR-15 and stick it in the back of the trunk? I mean, what? Really? You know, number one. And then secondly, you know, he is asserting that it wasn't, he didn't go there with the intention of killing people. He went there with the intention of, you know, protecting property, and he found himself in a position where he had to defend himself. That's the essence of his defense. And
are you seeing any parallels to the Bernie Getz? If you probably remember back in the 80s.
I remember Bernie Getz really well. And for people who don't, he was a guy who was on the New York City subway with a concealed handgun, which is illegal in New York. He had no permit for it. And he was confronted by a panhandler, as I recall, or somebody, you know, trying to rob him. And he pulled out the gun and shot the guy. And the city of New York was prosecuting Getz, but he became, you know, quite the hero there for a while.
I understand. He waited on that train all day to become, he wanted to be a hero, and he waited on that train, rode it all day.
That's right. I had forgotten that part of it.
In order to put himself in that position.
You're absolutely right. I had forgotten about that. Or as I recall, you're right. You know, we will see how this shakes out. But what concerns me is that you've got a judge whose ringtone for his phone is the Donald Trump theme song. And he ruled early on that you cannot refer to the people that Rittenhouse killed as victims. You may only refer to them as rioters or looters. And, you know, it seems to me like, you know, this thing is in the bag to start out with. So anyhow, Brad, I got to move along, but thank you for the call. Matt in Minneapolis, listening on AM 950. Hey, Matt, what's up?
Hey, good afternoon, Tom. So I kind of wanted to respond to that caller that was talking about the riots in Minneapolis, and I wanted to comment and say, and this is something that the mainstream media is missing, is that there were a lot of outside forces that were coming into the city to cause a civil disturbance.
Oh, and look at Umbrella Man. I mean, the first windows that were smashed by a guy who we later learned was either a right-winger or a cop. I forget which. How did that shake out? You live in the area. Do you recall?
Yes, so that was a police officer, as far as I understand. And what I had seen coming into my neighborhood were these guys driving these giant pickup trucks, the coal rollers that they call themselves. They had the blue line stickers on the back of their trucks, and then they also had the Punisher skull on the back, which is another symbol that has been adopted by the white supremacists. And they had came here with the intent of causing a civil disturbance, and the police completely withdrew from the area. And this is prior to any voting on any defund the police, and they have continued to be withdrawn from the neighborhoods. Like, it's ridiculous. And these white supremacists were leaving caches of gas cans around the neighborhood. It was scary.
Wow. Okay.
I'll take my answer off the air, but Tom, thank you for preaching the good word. And this is something that all of the media keep missing, that these white supremacists came here with the intent of causing a civil disturbance, and they succeeded.
Yeah, I'm with you. Matt, thank you very much for the call. Bill in Clifton, New Jersey. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Million years ago, I was in communication school for television radio, and they had the original FCC rules, and even a broadcaster had to have a third-class FCC license.
I remember. I had one.
Right. I think that was because in case the board guy who ran the board keeled over, you could take over or something like that. But anyway, all those, you know, rules fell by the wayside, and it comes down to one thing, which is language. The class I took in there that was called the Failure of Language. And language is so part of a person that speaks that, you know, it's difficult to
to claim intent. When they draft a law, there's always loopholes which get around the intent. There's the intent and there's the letter of the law. I think when you violate the intent of the law, it's more important than having an argument with the language. And if there was, you know, what's his name, Scalia spent time trying to have a seance with Washington to find out what was in his head, you know, for, in terms of intent. And it has to be more well defined. I wonder if when they pass a bill or a law, it should have audio files attached to it on what each representative had on their mind, and maybe, you know, people too.
Yeah, although the Supreme Court has ruled that it doesn't matter what the intent of the legislators was, that it, what matters is what the law says. I mean, that's the basis of Neil Gorsuch's whole originalism thing, well, which is now the new right-wing thing on the courts.
Right, but the Second Amendment is a failure of language. Even though it was written well, people are not doing what was originally intended with it.
No, absolutely. So, and the intent of the Second Amendment is, you know, clearly documented. I wrote a whole book about this, The Hidden History of Guns in the Second Amendment. It was there so that we could have state militias to replace a standing army during time of peace, and it was there to protect the slave patrols in Virginia, South Carolina, and Georgia. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it was just and very straightforward. Bill, I got to run, but thank you for the call. Your points are very well made. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax. The way car buying should be.
Let's get back to our conversations. There's you know, all kinds of stuff going on here. In particular, the Rittenhouse trial. Nicholas in San Cristobal, Mexico. Hey, Nicholas, what's on your mind today?
Thomas, thank you for taking my call. Let me see if I can say this so that it makes sense. I was having a discussion last night with a retired judge from Connecticut, a close friend of mine here, and she said something very interesting. She said, we were talking about the Rittenhouse trial, and she said, are you aware that the system, the judicial system, sometimes defends or attempts to defend, with the assumption they're going to win in the defense, chooses to defend the otherwise indefensible? And I said, why? How? To what purpose? To what point? And she said, well, it's often to send a different message to a different group of people. I asked her to clarify that, and she said, well, in the case of Rittenhouse, she said it may be an attempt to send a message to protesters that they will not be safe at protests, which really set me back, and I got to thinking, and we talked at some length about this, and she had me fairly well convinced that this is something that flies under the radar, if you will, and that the defense may be trying to send that message in this defense of Rittenhouse, this little murderer, really, as I see it, to send a greater message to the protesters, stop protesting or you too may get killed. Do you have any thoughts on this? I mean, the idea would be to discourage future protests, of course, so.
That's chilling.
What she was saying.
I mean, that's exactly what the brown shirts were doing, what the black shirts were doing, what Pinochet's guys were doing.
right.
You know, trashing protesters, killing protesters.
Exactly.
You know, this is exactly. Like Kristallnacht all over again, which was this week, actually, however many years ago, but the anniversary was this week. Let me ponder that, Nicholas. That's a pretty giant concept to lay on us all, that the judge and the prosecutors are essentially trying to send the message to would-be protesters, particularly people protesting racialized police violence, that in the future you will be putting yourself at even greater risk. And so don't even think about protest. That's stunning. Nicholas, let me ponder it. Thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for sharing that. Bob in Asheville, North Carolina. Hey, Bob, thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hello, Tom. A quick shout-out to my fellow veterans today. I'm a retired faculty member, and back in 2008, when President Obama won his first election night, I had a set of twins that were sophomores in my class, and they were back home at their parents' house, and they tested out to their friends a call to arms to kill this in, blah, 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 blah.
To kill Obama.
The next morning, yes. By the next morning, feds had stormed their homes and arrested them both. Whoa. And confiscated all their guns, all their computers, and they were at the parents' house. So the parents ended up with charges as well for aiding. These two students were thrown out of college, obviously. They'd lost all their guns, all their gun rights. They'll never be able to hold a federal position, which the Fish and Wildlife, I taught, was their goal. They would never get a job with feds or state. But why, under the Cheney presidency, it happened so quickly that this justice came to bear? But
there's a law against threatening the president of the United States. There's a very specific law about that.
Exactly.
I don't know if it came out of the Lincoln assassination or the McKinley assassination or what, but there is a specific law. And
exactly. And why is Kozer running around grinning about free speech and comedy? And I don't know why they're not being able to.
So are you suggesting, Bob, that the law that says that you can't encourage the assassination of the president should be extended to be basically you can't encourage the assassination of anybody?
I would think that should be a threat that should be addressed.
Yeah.
Lawfully somehow. And it's rapid now.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing that's troubling is, I don't know if you caught Rachel Maddow's program night before last, or maybe three nights ago, where she had on these election officials who are getting explicit death threats. Reuters did the reporting. In fact, I talked about it on this program the morning. You know, I talked about it on the program that day, and then she did it on her show that night about this Reuters report where they tracked down these guys who literally were making death threats to election officials, and were proud of it. And the police never showed up. And this is technically illegal. I mean, it is illegal to make death threats.
And
not prosecuted.
These were two white young men threatening to kill the first black president of the United States, and it was instant justice.
Yeah.
And it's happening now from teachers to medical workers to elected officials, even our president, and it's just nothing's happening.
Yeah, these are the early stages, Bob, of a vigilante society. And vigilante societies tend to become fascist societies fairly rapidly. And I think that, you know, I'm very concerned about this. I think, you know, the many, many people who are concerned about this are right to be concerned about it.
I'm afraid Rittenhouse will walk, and that's just going to encourage more vigilanteism.
Yeah, I'm with you. I am with you. Bob, thank you. Thanks for sharing
that
story.
Happy anniversary.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, good to hear from you. Wow. Brett in Seattle. Hey, Brett, what's on your mind?
Well, I had an idea from, you know, the reality TV show The Voice.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we should be selecting jurors, and they should be anonymous so that neither the defense nor the prosecutor knows the color of the skin of the person who may end up being on the jury. And I don't know how we would go about doing that. It'd probably have to be state by state. But
yeah.
I think that would.
There were, I believe, eight black potential jurors who were struck by the defense. I don't see how you could do that, Brett. I think, you know, because you want to be able to interrogate somebody who's going to hold your client's life in their hands. You want to be able to see their affect. Right. No, I get what you're saying. And you know, it reminds me kind of the, wasn't it Britain's Got Talent? Or there's one of those singing shows where they have the person singing without being able to be seen the first time, and they judge them based on something other than their appearance?
Yeah, exactly. The voice.
The voice. Thank you.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe there's some way to pull that off. But I think instead having, you know, stricter penalties for racially biased jury selection would be a starting point. I realize it's theoretically illegal.
And the judge, too.
Yeah, and the judge, too. There you go. Brett, thank you for the call. By the way, Sean looked it up during the break. This judge was appointed back in the 80s? Back in the 1980s. He's been reelected every single time. He's 75 years old, and he's the oldest circuit judge in Wisconsin. Naveed Shah is on the line with us. He's with CommonDefense.us. His Twitter handle is Army of Naveed, N-A-V-E-E-D, or at Common Defense. And Naveed, pull these two threads together for us. How do we support veterans and support voting rights?
Hey, Tom, thanks so much for having me on your show.
My pleasure.
I served in Iraq in 2009 and 2010, and I was there for their second ever national elections. For many of those Iraqis, it was their first time being able to cast a ballot in any election. And for that day, I believe it was January 10th, for once, the American troops who were there on the ground were not the target of the insurgents. Rather, they were targeting ordinary Iraqis on their way to the polls. I think more than 100 people were killed or injured that day because they had to brave bombs and bullets just to be able to go cast their ballot. And seeing what happened here on January 6th of this year, it's hard to believe that, but for me, for a moment, I felt like we had, gone back a decade. And while, our election day luckily did not have those kind of, violent attacks, the attacks that our democracy are currently facing are in some ways even more, even worse. They're more sinister because they're being done under the color of law. We have legislation across the country that is, in many ways restricting access to the ballot. Right now, 4.7 million veterans in this country suffer from some sort of disability. And so by restricting access to the ballot, by, cutting off early voting, by, not allowing mail-in voting, by, any number of these types of voter restrictions that GOP legislators across the country are trying to put into place, they are essentially preventing the people who fought to defend our democracy from being able to exercise their fundamental right to vote.
So disabled veterans are disproportionately affected by voter suppression laws that have been passed, these 33 voter suppression laws that have passed 19 states. Is that the essence of what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Many veterans who suffer from disabilities can't stand in long lines to wait to get into a crowded polling place to vote. They need to be able to vote by mail. They need to be able to vote early. They need to be able to cast their ballot in a way that fits their life and their disability. Mm-hmm. And while veterans are certainly a big portion of this population, there are disabled Americans, from all stripes and all backgrounds who are facing these same kind of challenges.
And we're talking with Naveed Shah. He's an Army veteran, the political director of Common Defense, and also Veterans Against Trump. Common Defense is the largest membership organization of progressive vets in the United States, commondefense.us. So, Naveed, we have three pieces of legislation that would expand voting rights. There's the John Lewis Voting Rights Enhancement Bill. I'm sure I'm mangling the name there, but the one that's named after John Lewis, which has some considerable support. Well, they all have considerable support on the Democratic side. Then you also have the what used to be called H.R. 1, the For the People Act, which is the most expansive of the three. And then you've got the one that Joe Manchin negotiated with Lisa Murkowski and some other Republicans that we know has at least one Republican vote in the Senate, the For the People Act, the Freedom to Vote Act. What are your thoughts, or is your organization taking a position on any of these three, or just arguing that, hey, we've got to do something, damn it, this is wrong?
Well, you know, we've been working on this campaign, almost since the insurrection. And we, on every iteration of the voting rights legislation that has come up, we've been supportive of it because it, to a certain extent, it is kind of the point now that, yes, let's pass some voting rights legislation. It would be better than what we have now, which is nothing. And unfortunately, the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act was, which has, you know, traditionally been passed on a bipartisan vast majority basis, was not even allowed to come up for a debate on the Senate floor earlier, last month, just a couple of weeks ago. And now the current iteration, the Freedom to Vote Act that Senator Manchin, introduced, we are very supportive of that. We are very supportive of Senator Manchin, taking the initiative when S1 or HR1, the For the People Act, failed to come up with this compromise legislation with his colleague, Senator Murkowski.
Right.
At this point, many states have already started drafting their maps for the next year's congressional elections. And we need this legislation to pass to prevent any further partisan gerrymandering.
Yeah, Texas has already done it.
Exactly. It comes back to this, that voters should choose their elected officials, not the other way around, right? So if we're allowing them to draw maps in their favor, whether they're Republican or Democrat, it's not fair. And at the end of the day, the voters' voices need to be heard on this issue.
Remind me of the hashtag that is going viral right now on this issue.
Absolutely. It's Vets for Democracy. Our members are tweeting in support that if you want to support veterans on Veterans Day, one easy way to do that is to pass the Freedom to Vote Act.
Right. And in order to pass this, it's going to require either ending the filibuster or drilling another hole in it. There's a, they drilled a hole in it for Supreme Court justices. They drilled a hole in it for lower court judges and cabinet officials. And they drilled a hole in it for budget items. These have all occurred at different times. Is your organization taking a position on exactly how to get around the filibuster, or are you arguing that, hey, why are not at least 10 Republicans, in favor of voting rights? I mean, when the Voting Rights Act itself, the Voting Rights Act of 1965, which had to get renewed every 10 years, it keeps getting renewed. And when it was renewed during the George W. Bush time, which I think was 2005, you probably know better than I. It was renewed unanimously in the Senate. It was non-controversial.
Yeah, absolutely. Having Republican support on this issue would be huge, to not only to bolster our voting rights, but also to show all Americans that we have trust and trust the integrity of our election system. And it's disappointing that we can't find those 10 votes. But at this point, we are asking simply for passage of this, whether that means finding another carve out for voting rights legislation as it has been done in the past on those other issues you mentioned, or abolishing the filibuster altogether. We wouldn't be opposed to that, because at the end of the day, as a veteran, I swore an oath to the Constitution of the United States. The filibuster is not in the Constitution. It's an arcane Senate rule that has historically been used for this type of blockage of civil rights legislation.
Correct.
So it's really not something that we support. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I am completely with you. Naveed Shah, an Army veteran, the political director of Common Defense. The Common Defense, the largest membership organization of progressive vets in the nation. Check it out, commondefense.us, on Twitter, Common Defense, or Army of Naveed, N-A-V-E-E-D. Naveed, thanks so much for dropping by. Great talking with you.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it a lot.
My pleasure. Nancy in Woodland, California. Hey, Nancy, thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV. What's on your mind today?
Yeah, I just wanted to give a shout-out to Veterans for Peace. They've had a campaign for many years to, as they call it, Reclaim Armistice Day, which, of course, was the original name for Veterans Day.
Because
they feel that, in their website, they say they feel that the best way to honor our veterans is to celebrate peace and not war, so that they don't have to go to war. And so people can go to veteransforpeace.org and see what they're all about, and also to see what the various chapters are up to across the country.
Cool. Okay. Thank you, Nancy.
Sure. Thanks. Happy anniversary.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Nice to hear from you. I appreciate the call. James in Houston. James, did I get a detail wrong that Rittenhouse's mom did not drive him to Wisconsin? What did I miss?
Yeah, Tom, and like a true libertarian, I love the truth to come to be free. But yeah, Kyle drove himself to Wisconsin and went to his buddy Dominic's house. Then Dominic drove him to the actual riot. His mom was actually back in their home state. But furthermore, what's alarming in these conversations is y'all's talk about this judge being biased when he's defending the Constitution of the United States. And it's clear from the facts that y'all have had to correct already and that I'm correcting now, that clearly y'all aren't watching this trial. If this trial ain't a matter of self-defense no longer lives in America. Kyle Rittenhouse defended himself against serious bodily injury or death, which is what the Wisconsin law states.
Well, that's going to be up to the jury, James. And to the best of my knowledge, nobody else shot a weapon on that day. So, you know, how is he defending himself? A guy tried to take his gun away from him, and he shot him.
A guy that said, if I catch you alone, I will kill you, tries to take his gun away while he's alone.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how it shakes out, James. We're going to see how it shakes out.
What I'm concerned is that you're already setting a narrative, Tom, that this was a pre-motion.
I think that when you go to a protest, a riot, whatever you want to call it, you go to something with an AR-15, you have crossed the boundaries of rational discourse. You have become the problem, not the solution to the problem. And if, James, if you think, or other people in America think, that the solution to the problems that our social problems in America is for us to all get out in the streets with AR-15s, God help America.
Well, I think we can't lose track of our Second Amendment, but
this has nothing to do with the Second Amendment.
Just because you carry a gun does not make you a murderer, Tom. Cops carry guns every day.
He did kill two people, James.
Yes, he killed two people, and he wounded a third, and the third, quite frankly, is lucky to be alive. Yes, the third came up to him with a gun pointed at his head. That is self-defense, Tom.
Well, it may well be, and we'll see what the jury says. But again, I'm saying, if you show up with an AR-15 to anything, and
does it make you a murderer?
No, it doesn't. But if you kill people, in my opinion, it does. James, thanks for the call. Norman in Talbot, Tennessee. Hey, Norman, what's on your mind today?
Hey, how's it going, Tom?
Good.
Long-time listener. I just want to bring up one point that happens with these situations. Seems like that when the perpetrator of a murder or a killing only get one side, and that's the person still alive,
right.
Not the person that's gotten killed. And I watched this happen just time and time again.
So you're saying that the people that Rittenhouse shot are not, you know, their stories are not being told or not being told well in this courtroom or not even being allowed to be told.
Right. In other words, we don't know what they did because it's all Rittenhouse and he's trying to save his butt, you know, at all costs.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, what my little theory.
Yeah. Well, that's a good one. Norman, thank you. Thanks for that. Mike in Baltimore, Maryland. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I'm so tired of listening to you folks try to justify what this man did, what this child did. So first of all, you go across state lines, strike one. Two, you have an illegal weapon that you were purchased that you have illegally. Three, strike three. Strike four, who actually deputized you to protect anything to walk around anyone's street with an AR-15.
Right.
And here's the other thing. Everybody's talking about, oh, he was attacked. He was attacked. He was only attacked after he had already shot one person. So, therefore, please, stop with your whataboutisms and, oh, my God, it's self-defense. So if I have my legal gun and I just saw him shoot two people and I put three holes in them, am I going to be a hero? Am I going to be claiming self-defense? Or am I going to be locked up, thrown away, up under the jail, and have everybody that's defending that boy right now?
Yeah. Sadly, Mike, it depends on which side. Sadly, Mike, it depends on which side you're on, right? Obviously.
Exactly.
It's just like the guy here in Portland who shot, a right winger came and tried to attack him. He shot the guy in the gut and who died, the right winger died, and he went on the run. And when the cops found him, staked out the place where he was in rural Oregon, as he walked out to his car, they just opened fire on him, you know, just executed him. And
well, that's,
you know,
how they treat people on the other side. They don't
right.
see...
Because he killed a right winger. Like, you can't do that in America. You can't.
I'm sorry.
You
know. They don't see black people as being human. We are not human. We have no feelings. We have no emotions. We have nothing. We only have rage and uncontrollable desire to commit violence in their eyes. So therefore, please stop. I don't see the violence over here. I see it on the right side, majority Caucasian. I'm sorry. Everybody wants to talk around in circles. No, the only reason people are defending this boy is because he's white. And the only reason this judge is defending this boy is because he is white.
There very much is sides taking going on here or whatever. Okay. Mike, thank you.
Thank you.
Deborah in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Hey, Deborah, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I'm a longtime listener and first-time caller, and I think Mike pretty much summed up a lot of what I was going to say. Kyle Rittenhouse on the stand said that that man said he would kill him if he got him alone.
Right.
But there's absolutely no audio of that,
yeah.
No evidence of that whatsoever that that man ever said that.
Right.
And all he was carrying was a plastic bag.
Right, so it's like the George Zimmerman defense.
Right, right. And this is not self-defense. I mean, you're talking about somebody walking down the street with an AR-15. I would feel threatened. I would feel my life was in danger. So would I have the right to kill him for, you know, walking down the street with an AR-15? And from what I understand, the other people were not armed except for the last man who's still alive.
Yeah, the guy who lost part of his arm.
Yeah,
that's my understanding too. Is that they were both unarmed. Terrible thing. Deborah, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you very much. Liz in Los Angeles. Liz, we just have a few seconds. You got a quick point you want to make?
Yes. The U.S. Constitution says a well-regulated militia, if the right to bear arms is conditional.
To a militia. I agree with you. Anthony Scalia doesn't, and the Supreme Court doesn't, but I agree with you, Liz. Liz, I got to run, but thank you for the call. Thanks so much for being with us today. We'll be back same time, same place. In the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires all of us, and that includes you. So get out there, get active, tag. You're it.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.